Looking for your next favorite podcast? Start here.
Dvorak finds a way to make an oboe and a flute, the first two instruments to play the theme, sound louder than the response, which is played by the whole string section. It's a remarkably evocative and beautiful moment.
Unlike mathematics or sciences where there's a right or wrong answer frequently, in music there sometimes there is no answer, right? And that's part of it, is that creativity that leads you to, you know, who knows where.
Someone's rocking a newborn somewhere. Someone's watching a loved one take a last bit of air somewhere.
Today, samples from Sticky Notes, Classical Classroom, and Around Cincinnati. Welcome to Start Here from Cincinnati Public Radio. I'm Tripp Eldridge, your podcast jockey. Each week, we sample and highlight three podcasts to help you navigate the exploding podcast world and maybe even help you find your next podcast obsession. Plus, get an email summary of each podcast we feature with our weekly Start Here email blast. Just go to wvxu.org/subscribe and select the Start Here email blast at the bottom of the page. And if you like what you hear, please rate us at Apple Podcasts. A 5-star rating will help others find us in the iTunes gallery. Now, with special thanks to Cincinnati Public Radio's Wiser Advisors, Jim Nolan and Kevin Reynolds, and writing, research, and curation support from Connor Eldridge, let's start here. If you've ever found yourself wondering where Bach came from with all those melodies, or how Beethoven composed masterpieces without being able to hear, our first podcast this week is worth a listen. It's called Sticky Notes, and it's a classical music podcast for everyone. Whether you're a beginner looking to get into classical music but don't know where to start, or a seasoned musician interested in the lives and ideas of your fellow artists, this podcast is for you. Sticky Notes features interviews with top classical artists of today, in-depth looks at specific pieces from classical history, and deep dives into each era of classical music. Check out Sticky Notes, and you'll be well on your way to becoming a classical music scholar. Here's a sample for you, a recent episode of Sticky Notes that takes a look at the New World Symphony. It's a piece composed by Czech composer Antonín Dvořák. Host Joshua Weilerstein, the artistic director of the Lausanne Chamber Orchestra in Switzerland, delves into the history and origins of Dvořák's most famous piece.
And this theme, and don't worry, you're not going to be able to forget it, riding high and bouncing along, takes us back to the music of America. Because in his second theme, Dvořák uses a theme that reminded a lot of people of what they thought was Native American folk music. You can certainly understand why they thought of this in 1893, but there are some real problems with this idea. First, Dvořák had not encountered any Native Americans yet in his time in the US, though one of Harry Burley's great-grandfathers was Native American, which has led some people to think that Dvořák wasn't exactly sure how to distinguish Native American music from African American music. Additionally, the, quote, Native American ritual music that Dvořák was apparently studying at the time was not authentic. No one at the time really bothered to transcribe Native American folk music, like, for example, Bartók would do later with Eastern European folk music. So Dvořák was looking at music that was nominally Native American, but was probably written more, quote, in the style of Native American music. This explains the harmony being relatively correct in this excerpt of the symphony, but a complete lack of the knowledge of the rhythmic complexity of Native American folk music. This theme, whether it's authentically Native American or not, is gorgeous, and it's one of my favorite moments of the symphony. Dvořák finds a way to make an oboe and a flute, the first two instruments to play the theme, sound louder than the response, which is played by the whole string section. It's a remarkably evocative and beautiful moment. ¶¶ As with many of the themes in this movement, Dvorak presents the theme and then ratchets up the intensity in order to remind us of that opening pentatonic scale. And here is one of the only places that Dvorak breaks from tradition. He presents now a third theme, and it's the calmest moment of the piece we have heard so far. Now, if that sounds familiar to you, then you aren't wrong. It's almost certainly borrowed from the spiritual Swing Low, Sweet Chariot.
A sample of Sticky Notes with Joshua Weilerstein. Learn more about the rich history of classical music around the world with Sticky Notes, available now on WVXU's Podcast Central. So you got your fix for classical music history with Sticky Notes, but where does classical music stand today? Who are the modern-day pioneers? Why is it still an important genre? All these questions and more are answered on this week's new edition to the Podcast Central Library, Classical Classroom. Classical music newbie and host Dacia Clay is set out to dispel the rumor that classical music is hoity-toity. With the help of music expert guests, Classical Classroom explores how the classical influences music today, how new composers are changing the game, and how downright interesting classical music is to learn about. Music is meant to be enjoyed by everyone, and Classical Classroom is making that happen to classical music. March is the show's Music Education Month, featuring educators and musicians from around the world who are working to make music a part of every student's life. Alongside Village School educators Sarah Perkins and Michael Barber, Dacia explores in this clip the future of music education and the reason why it's such an important part of a child's learning.
You've touched on this a little bit, but why... why is music education, or even like fine arts education in general, why is that so important for kids? Like, even if they're not looking to be musicians when they grow up, why is it important for their educational experience?
And I can just speak to watching my students and their thinking that happens in a music classroom. And unlike mathematics or sciences where there's a right or wrong answer frequently, in music, they're sometimes there is no answer, right? And that's part of it, is that creativity that leads you to, you know, who knows where. That ability to think, okay, well, what's next? Like, I let my students, a lot of times, they're the ones who plan everything. They're the ones who really shape what the class looks like. And I feel like that's something that students don't get anywhere else in any other classroom.
Right, that kind of agency over what's actually going on in the class.
Right, yeah, and that they control it, right? Like, your whatever your level of dedication, you know, that shapes what the next concert looks like.
So I think you're sort of getting at the fact that like, they're getting a chance to have, like, hands-on responsibility in a way.
Right.
That they don't
absolutely
get elsewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And then in a way, too, to connect to each other. I mean, I have a couple students who play tabla really well. And those students, one of them particularly, kind of seemed like, I wasn't sure if music was his thing until I was talking to his dad. And he was like, oh, yeah, he plays tabla incredibly well. So came up with this way to have him play with the band. And all of a sudden, like, that kid is so different now. Like, when I talk to him, he's really confident. He comes in early to class to get help on things, and just his overall demeanor is different. And I think sometimes music just gives us a home. It gives us a place where we belong. We can connect to one another. And, you know, again, I don't think you're going to get that in a science classroom.
Yeah, so we should actually backtrack for just a second, because I realized that when we were talking about what the Village School is, we didn't talk about the incredibly diverse student population there. There's something like 60 countries represented?
I was actually just on our website this morning, and I think the number right now is at 66 plus is what they have on the website for nationalities represented. And I think there's well over 80 different languages that are spoken by the student and frankly the professional body of the school. Wow. So when you have a school that is so culturally diverse, one of the major threads that you're going to find within is going to be that music education piece. Now, music education in, say, India is going to be completely different than it is in America, but ultimately that language, that abstractness of the language of music remains fairly constant. It's a communication tool for culture. So you see that really well represented, and it's an interesting thing. If you go into the choir class or the band class, and within it, you have all these different cultural aspects that come out, and then they are also working together for a common goal as well. Mm-hmm. You know, piggybacking a little bit on what Sarah was just talking about with her tabla student, one of the things that she didn't mention is one of those seventh grade tabla students actually went into the senior diploma program IB music class and gave a lesson about tabla music.
Wow, that's so
cool. Now you have a 12-year-old teaching 18-year-olds, and they were hooked.
Yeah.
I mean, they were absolutely hooked on it, you know, because who better to teach that than somebody who has that experience, you know?
Yeah. So I'm sorry. I think you mentioned this before, but IB, what is that?
That's the International Baccalaureate Diploma Program. It's 2 years of intensive study into a particular subject. So in this case, in music, they attack music from five different aspects, from an analytical aspect, from a historical contextual aspect, from a compositional aspect, from a performance aspect. And then there's this other one that's kind of like the theory of knowledge concept, which is the thinking aspect. How do you reflectively and critically think about music? So when you look at any subject from five aspects, you need to be able to formally immerse yourself into the music itself. So if I'm trying to teach it and I'm teaching from a book because I'd have no real understanding of what I'm talking about, but I have a 12-year-old child who does completely understand it, their lives are steeped in it, that's a better learning experience for everybody. The 12-year-old learns about himself and his own confidence, and the 18-year-olds benefit from that child's knowledge, which is far deeper than my knowledge will ever be.
A sample from Classical Classroom, this week's new addition to the Podcast Central collection. See what classical music can do for you right now with Classical Classroom, now available on WVXU's Podcast Central. If someone tells you Cincinnati doesn't have a vibrant art scene, they aren't looking hard enough. You can get the inside scoop on all the latest from the scene with great local, regional, and national guests on Around Cincinnati. You'll hear guests explore a wide range of subjects like books and poetry, art exhibitions, theatrical productions, concerts and musicians, and local festivals. You'd never guess how many creative, talented performers and artists are hanging around the Queen City. And you can hear all about it at Around Cincinnati on the air on WVXU from 7 to 8 p.m. on Sundays, or you can check out what you've missed anytime through the Podcast Central archive. In fact, here's a clip from a recent episode of Around Cincinnati featuring Dayton area singer-songwriter Jane Sachs. Jane joins the show to talk about her work in the Nashville music publishing business and chat about some shows that she and her band have coming up.
Well, I'm writing for a publisher in Nashville now, and so 5 years ago, I set out to learn that market and that industry. And it was all because of a conversation I had with my dad on his deathbed. And he was like, well, you know, Janie, what's next for music? What are you going to do? And have you ever thought about getting a publishing deal? Which and I said, Dad, I've no idea what that would mean. Like, I don't know what publishers do. I always did everything on my own for my project. So I said, I know that people co-write and they make appointments, and that is like a really weird thing to do, to make an appointment to write, like at 10 o'clock, we will be writing a song tomorrow. But that's a conversation I had with my dad, and he died that week. And I just remembered that conversation, and I wanted to be able to answer those questions. I wanted to know, what does a Nashville publisher do, and what is it like to make an appointment and write with someone? And I did dive headfirst into it to learn as much as I can. I feel like I maybe should have earned a PhD because I just was relentless in my pursuit of understanding. and also understanding why my Jane Sack stuff wouldn't fly even with a country vocal. I thought that I had some songs that could just translate to that market, not as for me as an artist, but if I had a country demo singer singing them, that they could be pitched. And I was absolutely so wrong.
Why? How? I don't understand that part.
Because I'm, as for myself, I'm an indie writer, and there are no rules, there's no boundaries. You just write what you feel. If it makes sense to you in a way, it could mean different things to different people. And that is not how it is when you're writing for marketability and you're writing for the masses. So I've always been a writer, even when I was in the professional world of writing for Channel 7 in Dayton. I had to learn different things. I had to learn writing for, as a reporter. I had to learn writing for marketing. There's rules and there's things you can and can't do. And I had the revelation that it's actually in Nashville, it's no different than all the other writing I've had to learn. I just had to learn it. There's a craft to it, and it's the hardest writing I've ever done. It's so challenging, and that has kept me at it. And I was really fortunate to get signed by a publisher. That doesn't happen a lot to an outside writer. I live in Dayton. Mm-hmm. He's very well connected, and that was then, how could I stop? Like, all right, I got to this step, so I have to keep going. And I really, really love it. It is great writing. It's just very different. So
how many writing partners have you had?
Oh, hundreds.
Really? Lots.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I write with people from all around the country. I write with people in Nashville. I write with people out of the country. One of my favorite writers he's from Scotland. So it's just opened up this whole different world. And, you know, I took a shortcut because I've been writing for so many years, just a different kind of writing. But it presents its challenges too, Brian. I don't mean to be so chatty, but, you know.
That's the name of the game. It's the talk show.
But the challenge is I'm still me, and I still want to be moved by what I write, and I still write from my heart. So the challenge is, how can I straddle that fence and write for the market that is so commercially driven, but still be me? And that's where I am, and it's a challenge. And I hope that at some point I can straddle that fence and not feel the barbed wire or not feel the points of the fence. Because that's where I am, and I think I'll always be there.
Catching up with Jane Sacks. Jane and her band plays this coming Saturday night at the newly refurbished Sorg Opera House in Middletown. And you've got your guitar. Could you treat us to one of your new songs?
I will. So I will play a song that is being pitched in Nashville. I wrote it alone, so it is definitely more Jane Sacks, but it's not me on the demo. It's a country male singer on the demo, but I'll play that one. It's called Somewhere.
Sure. Jane Sacks.
Someone's rocking a newborn somewhere. Someone's watching a loved one take a last bit of air somewhere. Someone's lifting a veil to a new chapter. Someone's listening to a judge ripping up their ever after song.
A sample from the show and podcast Around Cincinnati from WVXU. Never miss another arts event around town with Around Cincinnati, available on WVXU's Podcast Central. It's chart time. Let's take a quick pass by the Apple Podcast charts to see what's rising to the top across the nation in the podcast universe, as reported by iTunescharts.net. Two new podcasts have joined last week's number one debut of The Murder Squad. All three of the podcasts debuted and then jumped quickly to number one after their debut. The first this week is Against the Rules with Michael Lewis. He's journalist and best-selling author. Remember Liar's Poker or Moneyball? Takes a searing look at what's happened to fairness in financial markets, newsrooms, basketball games, courts of law, and much more. And he asks, what's happening to a world where everyone loves to hate the referee?
The other new podcast this week to hit the top is Stupid Genius. It's the brainchild of YouTuber Emma Chamberlain, and in each episode she takes a puzzling question like, why do onions make us cry? And has given three guesses to try and solve it. First episode debuted last week and instantly hit number one. Now you can listen to every Thursday to a new episode of Stupid Genius with Emma Chamberlain. Number one on the Apple Podcast charts. Thank you for joining us for Start Here, Cincinnati Public Radio's Discovery Podcast. For more information about podcasts we like, check out Podcast Central at WVXU.org. And remember, if you've got a podcast or an episode you'd like to recommend, email us at podcast@WVXU.org or call us at 513-294-8030 and we'll add your voice to ours. For now, I'm Trip Eldridge for Cincinnati Public Radio, and thank you for choosing to start here.